Cleaning Nation, welcome to another episode of the Grow My Cleaning Company podcast. I want to take a quick moment and thank you, Cleaning Nation, for sharing the show, for all the great reviews on iTunes. Keep them coming. We love that stuff. The kind of feedback that I personally get from you via email, the Facebook group. You guys are an amazing group of human beings. I really appreciate you. If you are listening to my voice via podcast, make sure you check out the YouTube channel. It's video. If you're kind of sitting, you can watch. If you're watching us on YouTube, take us on the road by subscribing to the podcast. No matter where you're listening, go to growmycleaningcompany.com. I just put up an amazing opportunity, a magic tool to grow your cleaning company. If you dig the show, you're going to love what you have waiting there at growmycleaningcompany.com. Today, we are chatting with Robert Sparrow and Norma Robago from First Call Cleaning. First Call serves the San Antonio and Dallas area with commercial cleaning services. If you want to reach out to Robert and Norma, you get a hold of them at www.firstcallcleaning with a one, not spelled out, .com. Guys, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Glad to have you on. So I got to meet these guys. I don't know how, if you're listening to this fairly recently, we're recording in June of 2017. I just went on the show with Swept. They did a Reframe conference, and I was honored to be able to speak with them and be able to meet a few of you all in Dallas. And that's how I met Norm and Robert. They had such an amazing story. I'm like, we've got to get them on the show. Why don't y'all share just kind of the story of why there's two of you on the show here, and B, how you guys got together and are working together.
Well, I had started First Call Cleaning Services back in 2001, and had grown it to a certain level. Basically from a bootstrap startup, I think I had $1,000 when I first started. And I had met Norma. A lot of our employees are part-time because we service the small to medium segment of the office cleaning market. And Norma had applied for a part-time position, like a lot of our employees are. And I remember, thinking, wow, very impressive young lady. She'd been at Chase Bank for a number of years. One of those, at first sight, high-quality person. It was a no-brainer. And honestly, that's been one of our strengths over the years, is that, the folks that we have actually going in to clean these offices are people that, you might not think about in terms of, being cleaning staff, but because it's part-time, we're getting folks that are school teachers, warehouse managers, people that are just accomplished already, and she certainly fit that bill. She worked part-time for a little while, and I don't know, Norma, what was it, about a year maybe, and you approached me about an entrepreneurial idea you had?
Yeah, well, in between that time, I started off working part-time, like you mentioned, but then after that, got promoted to do the floater, which means a cleaning account that were open. And then after that, I got promoted to being a trainer. And I think that's where everything pretty much started, because the training program worked really well. Then after that, it just got to be a little bit too much. I was working too many hours, both day and night. So I approached Robert about telling him, I think I'm just going to probably focus on one job. And that's when the conversation came by, about me becoming a full-time employee. And that's where everything started.
So you had two jobs, and Robert liked you so well, he kept giving you more and more time and responsibility. And it got to the point where you're like, man, I've almost got two full-time jobs. So you went to Robert and said, hey, I need to back this thing down. And it sounds like you weren't sure which job you were going to pursue. And he said, no, make it this one. And he kind of worked away within the company to make that work for you. Am I hearing you right?
Yes, that is correct. Everything lined up pretty much what I was looking for. The flexibility, being a single mom, the flexibility and the hours really worked with me, with my lifestyle. So I went ahead and did it. I mean, it was the leap that I took, not even thinking about it, what was going to happen or the end of it. But so far, so good. It's been 5 years. And it's worked out great. I love it. I love the job.
And the beautiful thing is customers are similar to employees in that regard, where we all love getting new customers and we're fired up about it because it's fun and exciting. But sometimes we forget it's so easy, or it takes so much less work just to keep the customers we've got. And that same thing happens with employees. We're always on the hunt for that new talent, that new whatever. But I love that Robert kind of had his head on a swivel. And when Norma came to him, a key employee at the time, it sounds like, with some concerns of, hey, this job may not work for me anymore. I think it was kind of real heads up play, so to speak, to say, no, what do we need to do? Let's make this work. And I'm sure that wouldn't have been the conversation with every employee, but Robert, it sounds like you really identified Norma as a key player. When she had that conversation, you paid attention.
Absolutely. Mike, and to be honest with you, that has actually been a core strategy for, you know, our company from day one. You know, a lot of things I'm not great at, but, you know, my strong suit usually all through my management career was that I could build a team, I could spot talent. And I was willing to give people an opportunity at positions that maybe they didn't have, you know, the perfect resume for. I think one of the takeaways I hope people get today from this podcast is that I think we get too caught up in pigeonholing people where they have to have a certain amount of experience in this kind of job, or we don't consider them for this other position, you know, a certain educational background. It certainly helps, but by no means are they to serve as a litmus test, because we have made it a philosophy here, First Call, with other managers as well, where we've stolen them away, if you will, from much larger companies and positions to come full time, to convert from part time to full time here at First Call. Norma is, you know, just probably the very best example of that.
Yeah, and I got to say, I work with high school students at my church, and one of the things I'm constantly telling them, because usually it's the senior men I'm working with, they get real uptight about colleges and GPAs and their future. And I just want to always encourage them that not a blessed thing wrong with PhD or master's degree or any sort of formal education. Those are all great. But the pain and suffering comes in when you think, oh, I have a master's degree, therefore they will come up and give me a $60,000 a year job or whatever the case may be in your area, and I kind of deserve that. The reality is you will get paid for the value you bring to the world, period. If you do not have an education, you can absolutely make tons of money coming from the college dropout and be very successful. If you have an education, that's just like Robert said, this certainly in no way is going to hurt you unless and until you kind of depend on that education to be what gets you a job or gets you compensation, as opposed to your own, I'm going to work harder and smarter and, you know, whatever the boss needs, that's what we're going to do. That guy or gal is going to, without an education, is going to go far further than a very educated person that says, I know everything. I'm entitled to a job. So I wanted to encourage those out there with an education. Great. You've got a bigger opportunity to bring value to the world. Don't squander it. Those without an education, don't be fooled by, oh, I don't have the same opportunities. You may not have the same opportunities, but you work hard, and it's never a lack of senior positions as owners that, you know, oh, there's not enough good. I've got so much good talent and no place to put them. It's always the opposite. I've got all these positions I need to fill, and desperately I need someone that knows what they're talking about. And never is it someone with this education or that education in the cleaning business. It's someone that shows up, does what they're going to do, marries to my core values, works hard, all the stuff that it sounds like Norma is exemplifying for you.
Absolutely. You know, and you said the right word there when it comes to core values. That's what we really base everything on at First Call in terms of promotions, you know, is character. You know, quite frankly, and I always kind of felt like in more cases than not, if a person comes to you with strong, you know, character, you know, integrity, a work ethic, you know, a willingness to learn, an open mind, you can take people like that and quite frankly, move mountains with them. If you're willing, like I said, to give them the opportunity, even though maybe they don't have a resume that's a perfect match. And again, you know, Norma was a perfect example of that. You know, I looked at the fact that, you know, I learned through the interview process when I hired her that, you know, she was a single mom, had grown up in very simple beginnings, kind of a rough part of town. And through her, strictly her own efforts, you know, had become very successful at Chase Bank. I think she was there for what, Norma, maybe 15 years?
15 years, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she was in charge of their rewards program. I mean, she would take teleconferences from people from Dubai and around the world. So, you know, she alluded to that earlier, but that really was a big decision for her to leave, you know, Chase and to come to a much, much smaller company. I think your mother really gave you a lot of grief on that, didn't she?
Yes, she did. She thought I was crazy for doing that. Like Robert says, coming from, you know, corporate and into a small business that you don't know where you stand or where is it going to go, which way. My mom was very, very scared for me. Like I said, you know, being just raising my kids by myself and, you know, depending on that income was hard. I mean, but I don't know. I trusted Robert, and you know, I like the job. I like cleaning.
That helps.
I think that goes both ways, right? We talked about Robert kind of saw in Norma something that maybe, I shouldn't say others didn't, but saw something that when she had that conversation of, hey, I can't do both of these. I've got to make a choice. And the obvious choice is this big company I've been with for 15 years. I think it works in reverse, right? So Robert kind of had to see in Norma that, you know, it sounds like she's got quite a bit of responsibility at your company. And that takes a leap of faith for an owner to hand over his baby to this person that he knows to a degree, but it looks like it works in reverse, right? Norma kind of knew it's not like she's just going to leave Chase for any company, but it was really Robert and who he was and what he stood for and the time that they'd worked together. She said, this makes sense. So I love that there's just that mutual trust and respect as opposed to fear, right? In which case Robert says, hey, I'm sorry, I can't give you that much responsibility. Norma says, hey, I can't leave this great job, and you both miss out.
You're right. It's a two-way street. And, you know, for my philosophy had always been, don't walk by good talent. And I think sometimes, certainly there's a limit to that. You know, I mean, especially as a small business, you know, your pockets only run so deep. But, you know, not walking by good talent and finding a way, you know, to make it work, you know, particularly financially. You know, when Norma, you know, presented this situation to me and indicated that, you know, under the right circumstances, she might be willing to make this change. You know, the first thing I had to look at is say, okay, well, for one thing, whatever I'm used to paying a manager, I'm going to throw that scale out the window because, you know, I was, you know, familiar enough with her situation to know that she was working two jobs. So at a bare minimum, she had to make a salary equal to both of those jobs or else it just wasn't going to be possible for her, even though she wanted to. So
that's a big, you know, jump.
It is, you know, and I think as a business owner, you know, we already, all of us, you know, everybody's listening to this podcast, you know, that's a business owner. You know, we're already willing to take certain levels of risk that the vast majority of the population is not willing to. And this is just another example of you having to be willing to stretch, you know, your horizon and say, okay, you know, this is what I normally do. This is what I'm comfortable with. But, you know, what do? Do you look at a person like that and let that person get away? I've just been willing over the years to, you know, roll the dice and maybe go a little farther than average in order to do that. And, you know, quite frankly, it's worked out a lot more times than not, you know, and I would encourage people to really think outside the box. You know, it's a well-worn statement, but it's so true. Think outside the box. You know, where are you trying to get to? And if you've got talent, don't walk by good talent. I can almost never think of a time where I, you know, stretched and got someone and regretted it later.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'm the same guy that when I got the right applicant, they are hired whether or not I had a job for them at that moment. And I can't think of a single time it's bit me in the butt. All right. I could have this conversation with you guys for hours because it's fascinating to me and I'm a huge business nerd. But I want to make sure instead of just, you know, us enjoying ourselves, I want to make sure I give some value to you since you've been kind enough to come on the podcast. What's going on in your world that I can give you some help/coaching/attention on today?
Well, you know, I would like to have some additional information or some help in figuring out how to get some of these prospects off the fence once you've given them a proposal for services. I mean, how many times have we went to sales calls and, you know, there seems to be a great fit, you know, you feel like you've given them a good price, you feel like you're going to be able to take good care of them, they, you know, everything goes well. You go home and you go back to your office and you wait for the call or the email saying, hey, we want you guys to start service. And the days turn into weeks and weeks turn into even a month or more. And you're sitting there going, what happened? So do you have any ideas that might, you know, get these folks off the fence?
Yeah, such a good question. And I deal with that more so on the commercial side, on the residential side. The feedback I'm going to give you works either way. It's just for a commercial, I'd say in terms of closing deals and attracting clients, it's top five, maybe top three in terms of pain. With residential, maybe it's top 10. But either way, we're gonna solve that for you. So first of all, one of the things I learned early on having managed multiple sales teams in multiple different industries is the easy ones, and I'm doing huge air quotes around easy, are the ones you got to be careful with. The ones that are like, oh, I'm so sick of this person and we're going to change tomorrow. And you guys are in. Just give me a bid that's anywhere close and you're going to do it. And I don't know if it's because we take our eye off the ball or a lot of times for my people, they stepped out of process. I've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars training sales teams, both not just internally, but externally, where I paid other people to come train my sales teams and myself. And I found the easy ones are the ones where we step out of process. So if there's a process and a system that we use to take someone from prospect to someone that's got a bid to customer, they get easy and we go, oh, we can just, you know, kind of expedite the process. So that's the first and foremost thing, is that the more ready they are to buy, so to speak, the more you've got to double down to be committed to following the process, right? Because they're going to be like, oh, we don't need to do all that. Let's just go. It's quick. It's easy. Just give me a bid. We're going to sign you up. And then those are the ones that don't. So that's kind of groundwork on LA before we go forward. Second, honestly, and I'm going to help you at that point too, but once you've given the bid, it's too late. I get that a lot in terms of, gosh, we were working together and they like me and I like them, and I call them or text them and or email, whatever. They're super responsive and we're just ready to go. And then I give them the bid and they're just gone. It's tumbleweeds. And it sounds like that's a situation you all are familiar with, correct?
Sounds about right.
Okay. So the way to fix that, and again, I'll talk to you about what we can do after we've given the bid, but it's, I don't want to say it's too late, but you've given away your best tools by that point. So what you want to do is, first of all, make sure that you get pain. And I know this sounds like it's totally unrelated, but it is not. If there is no pain, there's no sale. If you go to someone and they go, yeah, we're pretty happy with our folks. You know, if you can save us a nickel maybe, or I don't know, sure, give us a bid. There's no reason to go forward. That's just an absolute waste of time. We need someone that has a real pain in terms of anything, right? I either we don't have a cleaner on the residential side, typically commercial already do, or we have people and these are very specific problems that I want solved. And they need to communicate those problems to you. And they can't be the generic, we want to save money, or, you know, you need actual emotion and pain. So once you've got that pain, you can have a real budget conversation. If you just start with budget, A, it's inappropriate. B, they're going to lie to you, right? Oh, well, my budget's nothing, right? Because if I'm paying $1,000 a month now and I've got to go through all the headache of switching, I got to save $200-$300 a month to make it even worthwhile. So my budget's $600. Go give me a bid. Not the real budget. Whereas if they've got pain and they understand, yeah, I'm paying $1,000 a month now, but it's not working. I'm miserable. This is the seventh contractor I've had in here in 5 years, and it's a part-time job managing these stinking contractors, and it's always been about $1,000, but $1,000 has never solved that problem. Gosh, my budget might be $1,500 if you can actually fix it, and this is the last contractor I've got for the next 5 or 10 years, and I can start dealing with other parts of my job that I really should be dealing with. So do you see how that, if you don't have a good pain conversation and they haven't communicated to you what their pain is, you can't get budget. Is that a fair kind of 1-2 step, or, you know, fair line?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would think that the situation needs to be where the prospect is reaching out to you versus maybe a cold calling situation where you're just dropping in.
Yeah. And that's always better. We talked about it. Like I mentioned earlier, I met Robert and Norma in a presentation I was doing. We talked about pre-framing and how they meet, how important that is. Obviously we don't have time to dive into that now. But you can control, you certainly can influence. So no matter where they start in the process, we can get them to the point where they know, like, and trust you. So yes, obviously if they call you or it's a cold call, that process is going to be different than if you're putting out marketing materials and they're responding to you. That's easier. But again, yes, the pre-frame is important. We can fix that, but not in the time that we have. So first, once you've got pain, which is most important, if you do not have pain, do not go forward. I will literally not give someone a bid. If someone comes to me, hey, I want one-on-one coaching. How's your business? How committed are you to growing? Nah, it's fine. I'm doing well. Are you coachable? Are you really, how passionate about it? Yeah, I'd like to grow. I'd like to, you know, if I bought a lottery ticket, I'd like it to win. Are you willing to do anything different? Well, there's nothing we're going to talk about. I can't help you. I'm not mad at you. I don't enjoy the podcast, but it doesn't matter what I charge. You're not qualified as a customer. So I'd encourage you to make sure if there's no pain, the process stops. You're not going to waste your time on that customer in this kind of round and round, you know, we're not getting anywhere fiasco. Once you've got pain, then you can have a real budget conversation. Once you've had the budget conversation, now you can have a clear future conversation. And that's a very professional. And first of all, the way I set it up is, hey, if I come out there and for whatever reason, you don't think I'm a good fit, would you be comfortable telling me that? And you're going to get about 100% positive response. Yeah, of course so. And this is awkward, but if I come out there and for whatever reason, I don't think we're a good fit, right? I think we're not the best contractor for you. Would you be okay with me just telling you, hey, I don't want to set you up with the same problem you have now with us 6 months down the road. Would you be okay with me just trying to find a fit that'd be better? Again, 100% of the people are going to go, yeah, of course. Great. And if we get out there and for whatever reason, you feel like we're going to be a great fit and I think that we can do a good job for you, what would you like to see happen next? That's, if you're going to write anything down, that's the one. What would you like to see happen next? a rookie's going to go, well, then you're going to buy something, right? Nope. What would you like to see happen next? They're going to say pretty much one of three things. One is, well, what do you mean? Then I want you to get started. Oh, okay, that's fine. But now they've committed for that they're going to get started. And when you get out to the appointment, when you give the bid, and I said appointment, not email, when you get on the appointment, where you give the bid, you start with that same conversation. Hey, is it still okay if I tell you we're not a fit? Or will you still tell me? Yes, 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 yes. And I forgot, what did you say you wanted to say happen if we're both a fit? Oh, you want to get started? Great. That makes it very hard for them not to do the job right then and there. So that's the first thing. The second thing they're going to tell you is some sort of an objection. Well, if it's too high or it's too whatever, it's too great. I think you'd like to know that objection now before you give the bid than after. The third thing they're going to do is that there's some sort of process they have to follow. Well, it goes to the board, or I've got to do this or that or the other. And again, that's really another form of objection. And now you can solve that with a third party story right now, right? So instead of going, okay, we'll come give you a bid. And then now you're going to the board. And I don't know why you won't call me. And I feel like I'm stalking and you're just like, leave me alone. I know the board meets on the 5th and we can have an agreement. Okay, great. You're going to be on the 5th. Would it make sense for me to be at that meeting? I found that a lot of times when the boards have meetings, they have a lot of questions and you can't answer them. And then you ask me to come out the next board. It's a big headache for everyone. If you'd like me to come for the first 5 minutes or the last 10 minutes or whatever the case may be, I'm happy to do that. But you see how now you've got the A, you've got pain, B, you've got budget, C, you've got their decision-making process that you can walk through and agree up front before you give them bid what's going to happen. So afterwards, you're just following up on the paradigm that you both agreed on was best for them. You're not pressuring them, that you're not chasing them. You're calling them saying, hey, it's the 4th. We agree that we're going to talk today. And most of the time what's going to happen, when they're going to say either no, when you come out, we're going to tell you it's not a fit, or we're going to tell you right then. So you eliminate the whole process of I give you a bid and then there's a time before you make a decision and you set up that the decision will be made right then. And if there is some sort of a legitimate board meeting or meeting that has to happen with other people, you can try and set that up that day, right? Well, if Bob's got to be involved in this, let's just have Bob there that day as opposed to trying to regurgitate this information back and forth over the next 3 weeks. In the worst case, you can't be there, Bob can't be there, and they're not willing to do that. But at least you know, well, we are going to have a conversation on this date at this time by phone or in person, and you're either going to sign up as a contract or you're going to tell us why we're not a fit. So you see what I'm saying? You want to kind of solve that problem at the front end, not at the back end.
No, it's a different approach. Certainly a different approach than what I've been doing, that's for sure.
Yeah, so 90% of the work is laid before you give the bid, but that wasn't the question you asked. The question you asked is, once I give the bid, if they disappear and ghost me, what do I do? The answer is to take it away. We get pushed to, I call this girl that I like and she won't call me back. So now I call her 7 times a day as opposed to one, and she goes 7 miles away as opposed to 1 mile away. So we got to do the same thing with the customers. If they're not calling back, there's a reason. It's not that they've forgotten, and us calling back more often is not going to solve that pain or problem. So what I would do is take it away and say, hey, I always tell people final message, right? And for me, it's 3. I will never call someone more than 3 times, period, without a response, period. And that final, because either they're not interested, in which case me calling 100 times ain't going to help, or they are interested, but they're just busy. But we train them to say, I'm going to call you every day till the end of time. So when you call, like, oh, I'll talk to him later, ignore the call. And then you leave voicemail. Oh yeah, he'll call back later and I'll just deal with it then. And that can go on indefinitely. On the third call, I go, hey, Norma, this is the last call I'm going to give. Sounds like you're not interested. Maybe I've done something to offend you. If that's the case, would you just, not even about the business, would you just call me and tell me what I've done wrong? Because I really feel bad. I felt like we had a great relationship. Now maybe you're upset with me. And if I've hurt your feelings or done something wrong, I'd really like the opportunity to make it up or just know what I did. Could you just call me and give me a heads up? I won't call you back again. This will be the last call. You know, you've made it pretty clear that I just don't want to bug you, but man, if you could just on a personal note, call me and let me know what happened, boy, I'd be able to sleep better tonight. So now we're changing the paradigm from buy this thing, I'm going to call you and badger you, to you don't want to be called, I won't call you anymore. And then on a personal note, I would like to know, like, what happened? We were so friendly. Now, are you angry with me? Did I do something wrong? And you will get a call, because most of the time you haven't done something wrong and they feel bad and they call, oh my gosh, no, Mike, you've been great. I'm so sorry. So that's how I handle. Again, it's less effective if you haven't laid the proper groundwork, but if that's where you find yourself, no more than 3 calls. The third call, you tell them, I will not call you again. If I don't hear from you, I'm just going to assume that you're being very clear. You're not interested. God bless you. That doesn't mean the marketing processes we have in the background stop. They're going to keep going, but my personal physical phone call will stop. And I'm going to have that kind of additional personal level of, what have I done? How can I fix this? And you'd be shocked at how many people, especially if you treat them right and they like you as a person, like, oh my gosh, Mike's upset. He thinks I've hurt his feelings. They'll call you right back and explain, no, it's just me. I've been busy. And then that conversation begins again. Any questions?
No, I like that. I like that. That's great.
Yeah, I've been doing it for not 20 years. I've been in business 20. I've been doing that for 10 years and kind of building sales processes like that. And not only is it a heck of a lot more effective, oh my gosh, is it more fun? Your salespeople will really enjoy it. Okay, we are already way over because you two people fascinate me. So we're going to hit the lightning round. I'm going to ask three quick questions. Either one of you can answer. Don't do both because we don't have time. So you guys pick who's going to answer each one and we'll go forward. Question number one, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received? I'll make it easy. Norma, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
I would say from Robert, it would have been like, make sure you're approachable. Make sure you listen carefully and understand either the customer or the staff needs.
Great. Couldn't agree more. That was three for the price of one. Well said, Norma. Robert, what is the biggest mistake you've made in the cleaning business that we can all learn from?
From a growth standpoint, trying to do too much too soon. Even when you're doing all the right things, if the financial support is not there, ultimately you won't be successful.
Yeah, steady growth is steady. Explosive growth could be explosive in that it blows up your company or blows up in your face. So yeah, I couldn't agree. Slow and steady often wins the race, certainly on a fixed budget. All right, last question. We'll throw it to Norma. Norma, what's one quick, easy to implement way that Cleaning Nation can, one idea that they can put into practice to make their lives or their business just a little bit easier?
The collection. Make sure you're collecting on a timely manner with your customers. Make sure you have a schedule and agenda, and you go by that every month.
Yeah, God, it's so funny. Those are the things that you wouldn't think of till you've been in business a little while, and you're like, why am I making so much money on paper, but my bank account's empty? And it's details like that that will sink a company in just ridiculous fashion. All right, Norma, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for sharing your passion, your story, your desire to grow. I appreciate you. I know the Cleaning Nation appreciates you. Cleaning Nation, if you want to check out Robert and Norma's show notes page and get the special video I made for you, it's all at growmycleaningcompany.com. I will see you there.
Congratulations. You are now 16% smarter. Still can't get enough cleaning goodness? Go to www.growmycleaningcompany.com for more of the good stuff. Ever want to be rich and famous? Owners of cleaning companies, as well as industry experts, can apply to be featured on the show by emailing our producer, Natalie, at support@growmycleaningcompany.com. Until then, don't miss out on all the latest cleaning industry lovin' at www.growmycleaningcompany.com. Check it out now.